very practical concern in our readings today, ultimately about our speech. If you look at the thread that runs between the first reading and the gospel, there's this concern about how we speak and ultimately what it reveals about our mind and our heart. So this is actually a very cultural kind of sin in a unique way that I think we as Americans are exposed to over and over and over, what we call gossip. Maybe at some other time, I'll tell you that the word gossip is actually connected etymologically to the term godparent. It's a long kind of winding history, but there's something for some Catholic trivia for you. But interestingly, with that connection, if you go into the catechism, there isn't a sin of gossip listed because it's actually more precise. The term that we use for gossip is a little too loose. It actually, in some ways, lets us hide from the real malice or evil that's there that we can do with our speech. So the Catechism really dials in on two very specific kinds of sins. There's calumny, which is making something up that is destructive to the reputation of another person, or there is detraction, which is revealing a truth about a person's faults or flaws or sins that is destructive to their reputation. And these two sins actually fall into the category that we call grave matter. So if we know our moral theology, that means if we do them with full knowledge, we know that they're wrong, and with deliberate consent, we freely choose to do it, that's mortal sin. This is how serious a gift our reputations are. It isn't just because the church didn't know where to put sins of the tongue that oftentimes in examinations of conscience, calumny, detraction, fall in that fourth commandment, thou shalt not kill, the fifth commandment, sorry. And it's because next to our physical lives, so much of our connection with human society, with other people, comes from our reputation. So if we destroy that for someone else, we are, in essence, cutting them off from their connection with other people. We're doing violence to some important aspect of who they are. It'll be clear. Speaking about a person with your spouse, with the counselor, the doctor, with the spiritual director, with a wise friend, we're trying to process things, trying to share about how we've been hurt. These things don't fall into the category of detraction or calumny. We need to be careful that we don't give ourselves a giant loophole in saying, well, I was just venting, because we know that at a certain point we go beyond that. And that actually leads us then into a third, maybe lesser category, or at least not objectively grave matter, which is just uncharitable speech. Sometimes we're talking with people who already know the faults, the flaws, the sins of another person. But why are we talking about them? Is it, as the scriptures say, to build someone up, to do actual good for them? Is it motivated by authentic charity? Or is there a malice there? We're seeking to do damage, to hurt others. We can even at times use prayer as a shield for that. I'm just asking someone to pray for them. Are we, though? Are we actually? Or is that just sort of trying to baptize our uncharitable speech? This all gets into the fact that the concern of the first reading in the gospel, the concern of Jesus, is not just with modifying our behavior. Right, we hear in the first reading that speech reveals the bent of one's mind. And we hear Jesus in the last line of the gospel that it's from the fullness of the heart that the mouth speaks. So this is what gives us hope, right? This is why this isn't just a don't you do the thing kind of homily, but instead it actually becomes a way for us to come and know ourselves. Why is it that we are speaking ill of others? Either making things up or sharing destructive truths about them or just piling on and letting loose? What is there that's going on in our heart that this is what's coming out? What's the fullness that's there? And so often, it could be, they hurt me, so I'm trying to protect myself. I'm trying to get some level of satisfaction. Essentially, it becomes a kind of vengeance. It could be out of jealousy, right? I'm ashamed in their presence of what they have, what they are, what they do. And so I'm trying to, as St. Ambrose would say, heal myself by wounding another. It might be that it's fear. I don't have any other way that I can think of dealing with them. So my speech becomes the weapon or the shield that I use to protect my own kind of fragile ego. That's where Jesus desires to draw close. So when I was in high school, there were a group of guys who were trying to change the way that they spoke. And they didn't go the route of having a jar that you had to put money into. They agreed that when they misspoke, they'd slap each other. This is high school boys, right? This is what we do. Not a great way to change our behavior. Instead, what we want is actually to let the Lord come to the fullness of the heart, to those places where we are hurt, to those places where we don't feel like we have enough, where we feel jealousy towards another person, where we're afraid that the other person could hurt us, or whatever other motives there are, it's there that Jesus wants to go. He's not just standing off apart going, "Don't you say that thing." He's going, "Why do you want to?" He wants to heal the tree from the root. So will we let him draw close to us? Right? This is the good news. Because all of those things, all of those motives that may lead us to weaponizing our speech fall into the arena of death's power. And we hear from St. Paul what the reality about that is. Death is swallowed up in victory in Christ. Where, O death, is your victory? Where, O death, is your sting? This is what Jesus wants to say to those forces that take hold of our heart and then lead us into sin. What does that look like? It's one very short story from my favorite saint, St. Francis de Sales, who himself actually for a lot of time struggled with an intense anger, really reformed himself by God's grace. He was a bishop and was dealing with a nobleman who had taken up with a woman he wasn't married to. And so he did all the right things. He went privately to them, tried to call them back to virtue. They wouldn't. And this was a public scandal, so he had to preach about it. And so this nobleman forged Francis's handwriting and brought a note forward that made it look like Francis had been flirting with this woman. And a friend of Francis's brought this to him. He said, "Look at this. Look at what they're doing to you," right? And this would be something that would be scary for all of us. And De Sales, so at peace in the victory that Christ had obtained, so at peace knowing that he had been held by the Lord, looks at the note and says, "It's a good imitation of my handwriting," and then set it aside. There is virtue. There is what it is when the victory of Christ takes hold of our heart and vanquishes the forces of death. This is what Jesus wants to offer us to transform our speech, our actions, our thoughts. It doesn't happen all at once. Believe me, I don't have that kind of peace around my reputation or my fears or whatever it is that De Sales has. But the saints show us what God can do if we let him have access. So if we're looking at our lives and we're seeing, you know what? I'm seeing some not so good fruit. And I know why it is. Then Jesus doesn't shame us, but he comes close. He says, "Let me bring my victory there. You're hurt. You're not going to feel better by hurting them. Let me take care of the wound. Talk to me about it. You feel a lack? Let me bring my generosity to you. so that you don't need to look to others and their things for your satisfaction. You're scared? You don't have to build the wall any higher. Let me come close and be your security. As we draw close to the season of Lent, this is a good opportunity for us to reflect. Are we just looking to change behaviors, or are we looking to let Jesus come and transform us, to bring new life, to renew the tree, so that even if we've been bearing some rotten fruit, we can be made good by His grace and then be able to bear good fruit. So it can be hard. It can be discouraging when we realize that we need conversion, but that's the last line of St. Paul's letter that gives us hope. Right? That in the work of conversion, which we're not doing alone, we don't save ourselves, it's Jesus, it's His grace, His life that transforms us, and we cooperate. St. Paul says, be firm, be steadfast, stay devoted to the work of the Lord. Right? Don't give up. Because that in the Lord, our labor isn't in vain. So whether these readings convict us, or we know what we desire to change, what we wish was different, we don't give up. Because in the Lord, our labor is not in vain. Death itself has been robbed of its power, so we have nothing to fear. As we receive Him in the Eucharist, then may we receive Him and let Him be the fullness of our heart, so that what we speak, what we do, we think, everything from the roots to the fruit in our lives is His.